think how actions, whether written or spoken, how they can affect people. I think that, again, you know, having him be accountable and aware of that is the first step in trying to make good out of it, right? So it's not going to be a 15 or 30 second apology and say, okay, I did my part. There's going to be continued work with the resources that we do have to try to show that he's understanding that he made a mistake.
You know, I don't know Anthony Bass beyond the fact that it seems to me not much good happens when he comes into the ballgame or when his name appears on my social media timeline. You know, that and the whole popcorn on the plane thing, of course, too. Bass, of course, apologized Tuesday for sharing an anti-2SLGBTQ+ boycott video that called for Christian Americans to boycott Target or Bud Light over the company's support of 2SLGBTQ+ rights. And you just heard Blue Jays manager John Schneider's comments about it. Look, here's the thing. I mean, there is no yeah, but when it comes to anybody's rights. But when it comes to LGBTQ2+ rights, it's very simple. You're either an ally or an enemy. That's the case when it comes to any marginalized group's attempt to gain equal rights. And in this case, this is a particularly egregious act, to my mind, because this wasn't somebody's idea of a joke or a pun gone awry or a word or phrase uttered in the heat of the moment. This was a premeditated action that we can only assume reflected Anthony Bass's true feelings at the time. He did it. Otherwise, there's no reason you can do it. Now, as an aside, dude, you're a 35-year-old father of a couple of kids making $3 million a year, and you decided to like an Instagram account on an off day? I mean, anyhow. What Bass and the Blue Jays want people to think is that the player will emerge from this a better educated, more sensitive individual. That's the immediate takeaway. And maybe that will be the case. Maybe a couple of weeks is enough to get rid of, I don't know, three decades of indoctrination. Although I don't know how we'd find out. I mean, is there some kind of test we can give Anthony Bass for that? I have no idea. You know, more likely the organization is quietly figuring out whether or not there needs to be an exit strategy that will allow it to tie the can to Bass without running afoul of the MLB Players Association's grievance procedure. I mean, look, I'd fire Bass and any of his other fellow travelers into the sun yesterday if I could. But unfortunately, being a Republican isn't enough to get you released. And good thing, too, because if it was, we wouldn't have a game at the Rogers Center tonight. There is a procedure and a process to be followed. And again, I get back to this. It's very simple. You can either be an ally or an enemy. Those of us who chose to be an ally do so because it's the right thing to do. It's the smart thing to do. And because most of us have talked to our grandparents at one time or our parents and realized that the majority of us, all of us here, are just two or three generations removed from being viewed as outsiders ourselves by somebody else. And the smartest among us, I'm sorry, there's no false equivalency here. You're either for us or against us in this regard. We understand that an inclusive society is a better, richer, wealthier society. Frankly, only cowards worry that someone else gaining equal rights means their own rights are eroding. You know, apparently this was Anthony Bass's concern. But here's the thing. Ultimately, it will be social media and Blue Jays fans who decide the sincerity of Anthony Bass's apology. That's what happens when you choose Twitter or Instagram as your battleground. In the meantime, though, I think we should celebrate inclusivity, including the kind that has room in the Blue Jays bullpen for a just slightly more than mediocre 35-year-old journeyman with a 4.06 ERA and a 1.333 whip for now. Kevin, this is the story of the day. The Jays are opening a three-game series against the Milwaukee Brewers tonight at the Rogers Center. But of course, Anthony Bass, because of his actions on social media, dragged the Blue Jays organization and his manager and his teammates into a discussion that, I mean, it's never bad to have this discussion. It's always good when you get a chance to stand up for somebody's rights. I think it is anyhow. But I want to ask you this. Anthony Bass, as part of his apology, said that he talked to his teammates today. And I mean, here's where I go. I learned a long time ago, you do not want to meet your idols. Trust me, you don't. You do not. It's better to never meet your favorite athlete and think that the favorite athlete shares the same views you have about life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, all that stuff. You really don't want to find out the political affiliations of your favorite athlete. And I know clubhouses, you've got a bunch of guys in there. As I said, I'm sure there are other people who feel the same way Anthony Bass does. And I mean, there's a whole separate argument about how organizations get involved in this. But I just wanted to ask you as a teammate, you've had a crappy May. You are in last place in the AL East, mm-hmm. and a lot of people thought you'd be a World Series team. You have come off a series against the Minnesota Twins. You took 2 of 3 games, but you've been playing sloppy baseball. You've been getting good pitching. You've been playing sloppy baseball. Your best slugger can't buy a hit. It hasn't hit a home run at home yet. You got a whole ton of stuff going on. How would a player view this? You know, again, everybody, I mean, we've talked about this. We know what goes on in clubhouses.
Yeah.
And you, more than anybody I know, makes the point that generally the truly happy clubhouse is a clubhouse that's winning. Everybody's making good money and everybody's winning. Everybody's a good friend when that happens. How do you think this goes over in the clubhouse? And I guess more to the point, as a player, because we know the Jays are going to have Pride Month activities coming up.
Yeah.
And you know that players are going to be asked about this. And you know, maybe even today, players are going to be asked about Anthony Bass's comments and essentially being asked to take a stand on it. How do you think guys view that?
Yeah, I would say a lot of guys don't like that just because of the reasons you just mentioned. They're in last place. They're expected to go really far into the season. You know, the start to their season is not going the way they want it to go. A lot of guys who are expected to perform at high levels is just not doing that, especially in May. So, yeah, this is, you know, I'm assuming that, you know, just to see ball, hit ball, or throw the pitch where you want it to go, I'm sure it has nothing to do with that. It's just the fact that it's something else that they have to think about now because of what he did. And that's just, again, you listen to John, it's in his voice. You know, that he has to actually come out and comment on this because they're trying to win baseball games and make a decent run at this thing, right? We've talked about this. How do you win 67 games? I think it's going to take 95 wins. And this is just something else added to that when it just doesn't really need to be added to that. So, yeah, I think it's, you know, as an individual, you think what you think, and right now you're probably not thinking very highly of Anthony Bass, but you do have to move on. Like, this is like you say your piece, you do your thing, it's your job. I think for me anyway, it's probably more on the manager, the organization, correct, the PR staff for the Blue Jays. Like, it's a lot going on there, right? You're trying to do whatever you need to do to make it easier for the guys to go out and play a baseball game and actually perform at the highest level without having to answer questions and do the things that they have to do that they weren't expecting to have to do. So, yeah.
We'll be joined in a few minutes by Jeff Levering, the excellent play-by-play broadcaster with the Milwaukee Brewers. Jason Stark, one of our favorites, will be along. We're going to talk about some of Jason's. Jason had an interesting article on shoe-ins for the Hall of Fame. Dan Plesac is going to join us. Yep. MLB Network analyst, former Brewers and Jays pitcher, 3-time All-Star. It's always good to get Zach's opinion to see what's going on. This, because we talked about it, we should just, let's play the clip of Anthony Bass's apology or his statement today. This was read at 3:30. He took no questions. He made a statement. We have to play Anthony Bass's clip just because it is a matter of getting it. It's already in the public record, but I think it's important to get it in the public record on this show. So this is what Anthony Bass had to say before today's game. And then I've had my say, Kev's had a say, we'll move on. But yeah, this is what Anthony Bass said today.
I recognize yesterday, I made a post that was hurtful to the Pride community, which includes friends of mine and close family members of mine, and I am truly sorry for that. I just spoke with my teammates and shared with them my actions yesterday. I apologize with them. And as of right now, I'm using the Blue Jays resources to better educate myself, to make better decisions moving forward. The ballpark is for everybody. We include all fans at the ballpark, and we want to welcome everybody. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
So that was Anthony Bass talking today, and you know, interesting to see the reaction when Anthony Bass comes into a game.
Yep.
Uh, 35-year-old dude, he's made, you know, he's, again, made his bed.
Absolutely.
Made his bed in social media. And as I said, that is ultimately where, that's ultimately where he'll be judged. It's just the way it is. It'll be Adrian Hauser on the mound for the Brewers tonight against Yusei Kikuchi. Say 7:07 first pitch on Sportsnet 590, the Fan and Sportsnet. Julio Teheran on the mound against Alek Manoah tomorrow. Thursday, a reminder, again, Thursday's game is a 1:07 first pitch. Will be Kevin Gausman for the Blue Jays against against Freddie Peralta. The Jays lineup is out. I do have it here someplace. No. I got it right here. I got Yusei Kikuchi smiling face here. Springer, Bichette, Guerrero, Belt, Chapman, Merrifield, Varsho, Kirk, Biggio at second base. Looks like a winner to me, Barker.
I mean, it's the guy hitting third. Like Chapman too. I mean, he's hitting under 200. Again, he's been spent a whole month late at the plate. When you are an elite defensive player like Matt Chapman is and a very good offensive player, a month for me anyway is too long to go doing the same thing over and over again. Hopefully today, because he has, you know, bat skills and can do things with the barrel and hit home runs and really helped his team, and especially where he's sitting in the order. Vladdy, we've talked about this, right?
Can I ask you this?
Better pitch.
Let me ask you this, because Vladdy, we talked about it. He hasn't hit a home run here this year. I mean, 26 of his career home runs so far have come in minor league ballparks, Salem Field and
Dunedin.
Thank you, Dunedin. TD Bank Ballpark in Dunedin. That's a little less than roughly around it, about a fifth of his home runs there. I don't think and I've talked to Blue Jays people about this. I don't think they really know how this newly configured ballpark is going to play until we see the heat of the summer months. I think that's something that they're going to be particularly interested in. The roof will be open tonight. It's going to be a gorgeous night. It's going to be warm for these four games. And I think the hope is that maybe we always have this discussion, right? Does the ball fly better in the heat or when the roof's closed, things of that nature. I think the hope is that the hotter weather, the ground heats up a bit, that maybe it's the type of thing. It's a type of thing that can help Vladdy, that can help Vladdy get going here. Is it just the fact that he hasn't hit a home run here? So is that just like a meaningless stat to you? Just an oddity?
Maybe. What's he had? 78 at bats here. That's 21 games, hitting .231 at the Rogers Center. He hasn't hit a homer. Obviously, we've talked about that forever. Maybe. I mean, he's got tremendous power to the pull side. The other way, I mean, everything's got to go right. It's got to be the right pitch. He's got to create backspin. He's got to have a big finish. Like, he's got to have good rotation with his lower half. Like, everything's got to go right. He's like most human beings when he's trying to go the other way, unless he's in minor league ballparks. That's where those numbers are sort of, whenever you say them out loud, it's the ball the other way. It's not the pull homers. He's got tremendous, when he hits line drives, I mean, just he hits it so hard the ball just doesn't stay in the yard. For me, it's all about what he swings at. It's not mechanical. I know the last impression was Bo standing over there and doing whatever he was doing with his hands and, you know, telling Vladdy whatever he was trying to tell him. That's not what it is for me. When most guys that are really good that I've been around that struggle, sometimes because they are swinging outside their zone, they think that's mechanical. That's why they go in to cages and they, you know, it's something wrong. Like I'm leaking with my front hip and my hands are dragging and I'm not staying on top of the baseball. Because Vladdy has a flat bat path. He doesn't lead with the back elbow. Mm-hmm. He's not trying to create launch angle. He's a line drive hitter. Okay, when a guy is a line drive hitter who has all the movement that he has to get in his athletic position sooner. When his stride is a little bit longer, you see the leak with the front hip, the barrel will drag, it will dip a little bit because of what he is swinging at. That is, for me anyway, whenever I watch him, a lot of it is when he chases up and in or in, that means the ball is not on the plate or down. If he can force the ball, at least until he gets to two strikes. He doesn't have a two-strike approach. So, obviously, when he gets to two strikes, it's battle. Stay up the middle, right? You want length to your swing. If you don't have a true Boba shit two-strike approach, you're just trying to stay in the big part of the field with length to give yourself a chance to maybe, you know, jam off the a little bit off the barrel and get a little bloop to right field or something like that. So, for me, get a better pitch to hit. If you do that, the mechanics will look the way they're supposed to look. If you don't, you're going to continue to see Bo in the dugout, or you're going to hear about him taking 1,000 swings between games, being the last one at the field, trying to figure out mechanics when, again, elite hitters most of the time who have been around long, Vladdy's been around long enough and had enough success at the big league level that it's not mechanics. You can make tweaks. But a lot of it is because the league now knows if you throw it a little in early in the count, he'll get himself out. You don't have to make a great pitch to him. Just make it look like a strike. If you do that, because of all the movement that he has and the long stride, the barrel will play catch up. He will do the lean back, roll over the third or shortstop, and not get a hit in big moments. So he has it in him. He's an elite offensive player. But again, when you have team meetings, and a lot of that was, you know, Jeff, a lot of that was, they weren't pointing the finger at him, but he was one of the people that was in the conversation. I don't know how much talking he was doing, because obviously we don't want to know that. But he's one of the reasons why they had the meeting, right? Is you just need everybody that matters the most on that team to start coming together and saying, if we're going to get out four times, we're going to get out because we're doing it right. Swinging at our pitch, you can live with that. But you can't live with the 0-0 eighth inning. They bring in a dude who knows how to get you out with a ball that has a little run in. Forget about the velocity. See so much velocity now. Doesn't matter. Now it's just get your pitch to hit. And if you do that, you'll have a better chance of going, you know, with your numbers where you want them to go. If you don't, you know, you might go on one of those as a team, a five-game losing streak. And, Jeff, you know as well as anybody, if they have another one of those, it will be very, very hard.
Yeah, it's what do you say? They're in last place, and the team that's in first place is awfully good and doesn't look like it's – put it this way. The team that's in first place right now, they've had a good month, but it's like – it's not – as if they've been dominant this month.
Well, that's because the Orioles.
It's a third place team is chasing them.
What's the Orioles?
Third place team, the Yankees, are the team that had the good month.
Yeah.
And that's. My concern right now is we're seeing it seems stupid. It's not even June 1st, but they're just. My sense is there's a real separation between the top three teams in the AL East and the other two teams.
Well, right now there is because of the way Manoa's looked, because of the way Vladdy's looked, because they don't have a cleanup hitter, and because of the way Chapman's looked in May. That's the reason, right? And now whenever you're hearing that they are having players-only meetings, have you ever heard of the unless it's the 2004 Red Sox – you never hear of them just having it on purpose. Like,
well, that was Ryan Dempster. Dempster's story last week about having a meeting when they were in a winning streak, just so they could say they had a meeting when they were in a winning streak.
Break it up.
Yusei Kikuchi on the mound today, 5-2. His ERA is 4.56. The Jays, you know, for the longest time, man, I'm looking at their record here. They Yusei Kikuchi pitched well enough for them to win. You know, 5 innings, 4 1/3, 6-6, 5 2/3, 4 1/3, 6 1/3.
His last start against the Rays is exactly the way he's supposed to look. I will say this. The Brewers, I'm going to give you a little some numbers here.
Well, okay, let me just tee this up for people because, I'd be lying if I said I pay a great deal of attention to the Brewers. I'm looking forward to speaking to Jeff Levering. Because when you read these numbers to me, I just –
oh, I want to see Rowdy Tellez, too. Obviously, he's done something different. Like, he's Rowdy Tellez that everybody thought he would be.
Right.
Right? Hitting a bunch of homers.
But these numbers, man.
They're 12-13 on the road. They're 4-6 in their last 10. They have a minus 21 run differential. Minus 21. They're three games above 500 in first place. Wow. Start there. They're 30th in OPS versus lefties. This is why the Yusei Kikuchi, you want to get off to fast starts, mm-hmm. right? You want to win that first game to sort of trickle down, especially when you're the fifth guy in a rotation. They're last in average against lefties at 207. They're last in RBIs with 30 against lefties. They have the third most Ks against lefties with 151. They're not real good against lefties, is my mm-hmm. point. So Yusei Kikuchi, who throws hard, who can locate most of the time with the fastball, his last outing, because it was the Rays, it was erratic. Yeah. It was all over the place. That's how it's supposed to look against a team who
You've made the point, Kevin. He's a fifth starter. There are going to be games absolutely. Where he's not going to be good.
No question.
Because he's a fifth starter. That's yeah. what happens when you're – that's why you're a fifth starter.
There is. And the slider – they call it a slider. For me, it's a cutter. Not too many lefties throw a slider. That's 91. It doesn't break. So, for me, that's the cutter. You know, you don't throw that. You don't abuse that as much. You live a little bit more on the corners. Your fastball command's better. He's maintained his velocity because he's mm-hmm. changed all his mechanic things, right? It's repeatable, so he gets it up. He gets the slot out, right, with his arm a lot. It's repeatable. Give him a chance to have the big inning if they can do that. Again, that's why I read those stats off against the Brewers against lefties, is if they can, you say, can get off to a quick start early in the game, give that lineup a chance to figure out the other starter. They'll have a good chance of winning that game and getting off to a good home start. But if you want to light some candles, light for Vladdy Homer or early.
He really needs a home run.
No question. No question. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that sounds kind of silly.
True.
But it's very simple. Vladdy needs a home run. I mean, the Jays need Vladdy to hit a home run at the Rogers Center. But, you got the Brewers for three. Then you go to New York to take on the Mets. Again, I have waited for a while before I've sort of passed judgment on this newly configured ballpark. Said to myself, I want to see it play in really, really hot summer type weather. I want to see how this park plays. You know, it's I would love to know what type of a statistical deep dive the Jays have done on the park so far.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just from speaking to somebody around the team, I mean, they said the thing that they've kind of, one of the things that sort of they've been interested in, and this person didn't give me the numbers and I didn't have the time nor frankly the inclination to look them up. They're wondering about the foul territory and the lessening of foul territory and what type of an impact that might have.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the Jays are aware that it is a different field. It's more than simply the social areas.
Jay's got a good lineup, Jeff. Like if they don't try and do too much, I know it's eye rolling and everybody thinks you're a big leaguer and this team's good enough. When you're struggling, expectations are so high and you're not meeting those, you try too hard. If they sort of back off, take a deep breath, exhale, it's okay to take the first strike. If it's a pitcher's pitch, it's okay to do that. Now you can live to fight another pitch, get your pitch. Give them a chance in these next few games at home to mess up. They're not perfect.
Mm-hmm.
The Brewers are not a perfect team on both sides of the ball. They're not. You can get to them if you let them mess up. If they do that because they have a good lineup, they will hit some balls hard. And if they do that, to further your point, with the way the roof's going to be open, it's going to be hotter, maybe the ball flies and that's all it takes.
Look, I will admit that at this point, I'm trying to hang my hat in something here. Because I just... the Vladdy thing just puzzles me. Like, there's other parts of this, you know. I'm not surprised Matt Chapman has had the type of month he had. There's really nothing about this lineup. Now, I was thinking about this driving in today. What surprises the hell out of me about this lineup? Well, I kind of talked about Brandon Belt as the cleanup hitter in spring training. You know, Matt Chapman, great start. I mean, Matt Chapman has career numbers. Has those career numbers for a reason. Dalton Varsho, as I said, I think Dalton Varsho is going to be a fine... Dalton Varsho to me is a fine number seven hitter. He's fine. Maybe some games you hit him six. Maybe you can hit him second when he's on a roll if you want a lefty up there.
Springer's not playing.
Exactly. Then maybe you can do that.
Yep.
Bichette's been otherworldly.
Crazy.
although that's not, that's something that doesn't surprise me. But I didn't, Vladdy just puzzles me. He just puzzles me.
Yeah, get a better pitch to hit. You'll see the Vladdy you want to see if he gets a better pitch to hit. He will.
The Brewers lineup, Darren Ruffel lead off, Owen Miller, William Contreras, Christian Yelich. There was a time where Bo Bichette and Christian Yelich were linked in trade rumors years and years and years ago. It seems so long ago.
Yeah.
Brian Anderson, Mike Brousseau, Joey Weimer, Tyrone Taylor, Andrew Monasterio.
No Rowdy.
That is a great name. No Rowdy against the lefty.
Ah, got 12 homers. Leads the team. They have a real tough time scoring runs.
Remember Christian Yelich? Christian Yelich was like the hottest thing in the planet.
Oh, no question. He was doing it all.
He's a great player.
Well, he was. And he had back issues. I'm sure that's not the easiest thing. And power left, and he's searching and reinventing himself, and mechanical changes. It's a lot going on,
there was a time when
he catch up, live up to contracts. It's not the easiest thing to do. Just think if he'd have signed that contract in New York or even here. Like, you had, luckily, for his sake, he signed that in Milwaukee. So, yeah, I mean, he's
Mark Boffo pointing. He was a 2018 MVP.
Absolutely.
Hey, before we break, I kind of mentioned this in passing, that the Brewers were the team that took you fourth in the draft.
Third. Don't cheat.
No, I wasn't. That was not intentional. That was a classic Blair brain fart. Third. Mm-hmm. I never asked you this. If I had to ask you what organization you consider yourself to be, like, what was your organization? Because you played for the Reds, you played for the Brewers, you played for the Jays. I said to you, Kevin Barker, what was your major league organization? What would be the first thing that come to mind? Brewers?
I'd have to be the Brewers. They signed me. They gave me a chance. Yeah. I take full credit for my career, good or bad. So, yeah, I would say the Brewers. I love playing for the Blue Jays. That was a lot of fun. Alex Anthopoulos is always good to me. The Reds, Dusty Baker. I mean, that was one of the greatest moments of my career is actually just being in a room, being on a plane, you know, talking about he liked me on the team because I knew how to go first to third. It's simple, right? To hear him say it out loud to me was kind of cool, and I actually got to sit on the plane with him. It's Dusty. Like, it's, you know, he's wearing the wristband on the plane with his suit on. Like, that's the coolest thing I ever seen in my life. Like, I just
that's
was
so dusty.
I was in awe. Like, it was the coolest thing
that's
with the toothpick
so
in his mouth. So, yeah, that was – San Diego, I wasn't there long enough I was just long enough to Ryan Klesko, I think, got hurt or whatever it was. Just long enough for Bruce Bochy to feel sorry for sending me down, which was odd. He had no reason to do that.
That's
so
Boch.
Just, you know, that makes me want to root for him.
Yeah.
With the Rangers.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would say the Brewers just because of the opportunity. And, you know, they gave me decent money signing in the third round in 96. Hey, they gave me every opportunity that they could give me. And I guess I didn't take advantage of it. So it's my fault.
Jeff Levering is the Brewers play-by-play voice. He'll join us next. We'll continue our series preview. Talk a little Rowdy Tellez as well. Can you never talk too much about Rowdy Tellez, I don't think. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Sportsnet 360, and Sportsnet.
Smart takes on the biggest stories in sports. The Fan Drive Time with Ben Ennis. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Got a couple of shout-outs here for Jeff Levering, the Brewers play-by-play voice, joins us. Mike Soroka made his return to the mound last night. I guess, technically yesterday afternoon. It was in Oakland yesterday afternoon. First time since 2020, August 3rd, 2022, be exact. Three strikeouts, six innings. The Braves lost to the Oakland Athletics, which is hard to do these days. But if you know Mike Soroka's story, I'm sorry, what did I say? Four runs, five hits, two walks, struck out three. If you know Mike Soroka's story, the Achilles injuries, the long road back, it was good to see him back on the mound, and I know the Braves are really happy to get him back. And also Liam Hendricks made a relief appearance yesterday after his battle with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and it was pretty cool. It was pretty cool watching him come out.
Yeah.
And shout out especially, and I had this guy's name in the tip of my tongue, the batter for –
And the umpire.
The L.A. Angels. Was it the Angels? The batter for the Angels and the umpire? Yeah, the L.A. Angels. I can't remember the dude's name. But they let Liam Hendricks have the ovation that he deserved. I was just kind of cool. It was cool. It's nice when people...
I teared up when I saw it.
And I'm sure dudes... I'm sure there was a... obviously the dude knows that. The guy knew that in the on-deck circle and everything. But it was good to see. And...
I root for everybody.
Yeah.
Good for both of those teams.
I like both those dudes.
I do too.
They're solid dudes. And
absolutely.
Liam is,
he was 96. He looked good in the eighth inning.
He did. The Jays fan. Don't even. Reagent deals I would like to have seen. Chapter 12. That was one of them. The Brewers are taking on the Blue Jays tonight in the first of three games at the Rogers Center. Adrian Hauser on the mound for the Brewers. Yusei Kikuchi for the Blue Jays. The Brewers are 28-25. The Jays are 28-26. And as I said in the conversation with Mr. Barker, I don't know what to make of the Brewers. I just don't. It's such an odd division. That I don't think you're ever, I don't know if you're ever necessarily out of it in that division.
Nope.
But the Brewers are, it's been like Brewers, Cubs, Cardinals have kind of been the way it's gone.
Sort of never have to be sellers in that division.
No, basically. No, you don't. You can kind of, it's almost the process.
Three games
of
above 500 in first place.
Yeah.
They'd be in last place in the East.
Jeff Levering is the Brewers play-by-play voice. He joins us on Blair and Barker. Jeff, thanks for taking time out and talking to Kevin and myself today. Welcome to Toronto. Thank you very much for doing this. I admit openly, I don't follow the NL Central. I mean, I try to stay on top of it as much as I stay on top of other divisions, but there always seems to be, especially this year, there always seems to be something going on with the Blue Jays, one crisis or another. try to sum up the Brewers' year for me, because I think Kevin and I were talking about this. I don't know what to expect from the Brewers, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
I think that's very fair on all accounts. First of all, let me start with the Liam Hendricks situation and Matt Theis. I would have gladly taken a two or three batter violations, and I would have struck out if I was facing Liam Hendricks.
Yeah,
because that's just the right thing to do. If that umpire kept turning that thing around, I'm taking strike three.
Yeah.
Anyway, the Brewers situation, especially in the Central 2, you just never – nobody's out of it, right? So I was fortunate to be on assignment over the weekend, and I had Cubs and Reds on Fox in the National Game of the Week, and we came on the air talking about how, well, you're 50 games in, and what Cincinnati Red fan would have said, we're going to be in it at this moment. And why not?
Mm-hmm.
Why not them? They're playing pretty well. They're a scrappy team. They're in third place in the division. They're four games back, and they're five games under 500. The Central has always been a tough division in terms of everybody being around 500, and now with the balanced schedule, nobody's beaten up on anybody within the division. I mean, the Brewers played the Cardinals twice in the first 6 weeks of the season, two series. They don't see them again until the end of September. I mean, that's just how weird the division is. It's anybody's race. It's a battle of attrition in terms of who stays healthy, who does not. The Brewers right now have not been healthy, especially in their starting pitching. So if they can hang on and tread water until their guys come back in the end of June, potentially July, then I think they're going to be in pretty good shape to make a run over the next couple of months during the regular season.
Jeff, other than Rowdy Tellez, give me a name of the everyday players that I should pay attention to.
William Contreras behind the plate. I mean, he's up there in terms of defensive runs saved. The catching department, he was the player that the Brewers got from Atlanta as the Braves got a little bit better with Sean Murphy behind the plate from the Oakland Athletics. Just a squeeze for position player ability at the catching department for Atlanta, so the Brewers gain as the Braves loss. But he's been outstanding defensively. He's starting to swing the bat a little bit better for the Brewers as well. And I'd say defensively, Bryce Terang at second base, he's got an opportunity to win a potential gold glove at second base in the National League, and that's saying a lot. Craig Counsell has said he is as good defensively as anybody that he has had in his tenure, and he's the longest tenured manager in the National League. So that's saying a lot.
You mentioned the Brewers' health issues. I believe they've got
Nine players, maybe 10 now from the opening day roster in the injury list. I see Jesse Winker was placed on the IL today, I believe, with a cervical strain, and Abraham Toro was called up. So given all these health issues, Brandon Woodruff, Wade Miley, Urias, Garrett Mitchell, Willie Adames, of course, hit by that foul ball. Like, how is Craig Counsell approaching this?
Every day is a new day, and you get through that game that day and see how you come out of it. I think that's how he has to approach this. He hasn't had his opening day lineup out there with full health since opening day. That's it. That's even Luis Urias, who went down on opening day against the Chicago Cubs down at Wrigley. He's been on the 60-day injured list. He might come back on this road trip after the Brewers leave Toronto and go down to Cincinnati. And Willie Adames might rejoin the club at that point as well. But he hasn't had his full deck of cards the entire season. So I don't think he knows what it's like to play with a full deck. And he just advances to the next day. The Brewers were hopeful to come out of spring training with six starting pitchers. One of those guys was Aaron Ashby, and he never threw a pitch in spring training, never even threw a bullpen in spring training. So now you're down to two-fifths of your starting rotation that's in there right now. And tonight's starter Adrian Hauser started the season on the injured list too. So the only guys that are left from that starting rotation that began the season are Freddie Peralta and Corbin Burns. They've had to shoulder a lot of the load, and you know, considering this team is three games over 500 right now, and in first place still, right after Memorial Day, I'd say they're in pretty good shape.
Roddy Tellez got 12 homers. Have you seen anything different from him? Yeah, he's a power guy. Like line to line, it's got some kind of power. But has there been a change? Like mechanical? Is there, you know, swinging at different pitches? What have you seen from him?
I think that he's just comfortable who he is, and anybody who's been around him would say that he doesn't change for anybody, personality wise, offense wise. He is who he is, but now he's had the opportunity to play every single day. He doesn't have to look over his shoulder. He knows he's going to be in the lineup virtually every single game. He's played a great first base. Ask any of the Brewers infielders, and they'll say, I'm a good infielder because of Roddy Tellez over at first base. He might not have the best range in the world, but whatever he can get to, it's going to go in his glove, and he's going to get an out. He's right in the middle of the lineup every single game, and the Brewers are lucky to have him.
Jeff, at this stage of his career, what is Christian Yelich?
Well, he's taking batting practice right now, and he's been checking on the Schneider hot dog tilt-a-whirl that's out there pretty recently. Listen, he is not the MVP guy that he was in 2018, 2019. He's been a very productive player when he gets on base. He draws walks. He's 10 for 10 in stolen bases. He might have 11 at this point. He has not been thrown out. He's been better in left field than he has been in the past. When he gets on base, he's productive, and he's done his fair share of that. He's not going to win any batting titles anytime soon. There's going to be some swing and miss. But when he unlocks the power, it's still there. He might not hit 25 to 30 home runs this season, but if he hits 15 to 20 from the leadoff spot, I think the Brewers would be very pleased with that. Nearly scored 100 runs last season, and he's hitting at the top of the lineup today. He is in the number four spot because the lefty's out there. But I think Christian Yelich is still a very productive player. Is he worth the $26 million he gets every year now since he signed the extension? Maybe not, but he's still a very, very good baseball player.
The new rules helped or hurt the Brewers?
I think it helped them, especially early on, because they used their speed when Garrett Mitchell was still healthy. They lost a lot when he went on the injured list with that separated shoulder, more than likely lost for the season. But they had some of the greatest team speed in baseball, and they were showing it the first couple of weeks. They've been at a little different club over the last 6 weeks since Garrett Mitchell got hurt. But at the same time, I think they really have helped, especially the defensive shifting. The athletes are starting to really separate themselves in terms of defensive positioning on the infield because of the lack of shifting. You're starting to find out who those athletes are on the field.
Jeff, really good of you to join us, my
Great
friend.
Stuff.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, buddy.
You got it. Happy
All right.
to do it.
We'll see you later. Take care. This is Jeff Levering. He's the voice of the Brewers, also one of Fox's voices on national and regional baseball coverage.
Got to stay afloat somehow.
Still forgot to mention this at the start of the show. The Baltimore Orioles did put Cedric Mullins on the IL with that abductor/groin injury.
Yep.
They've signed Aaron Hicks.
Yeah.
And, you know, why not?
Well, I don't think you read too much into it. Maybe away from New York would help.
You're not paying anything to have him, it's not his fault
that New York paid him what they paid him. It's not his fault. Yeah, he just sort of fell in a bad way and, you know, being a switch hitter and it ain't working.
Well, and I think the other thing it does, too, is, you know, the Orioles do have, they do have some minor leaguers who, I mean, we've talked about their minor league depth. They've got a couple of dudes who are going to be everyday major league outfielders soon. But I kind of like the idea of not rushing any of those guys up right now. I think they saw they didn't really rush Gunnar Henderson up.
A couple of those guys are hurt, too, at the minor league level.
Yeah, so I think, it makes sense.
He's not an everyday guy. He's going to come there. He might pinch hit late. He might play a little defense. He might run the bases. Like, he's not going to... hinder what they're trying to do in Baltimore.
And the thing about Aaron Hicks is, I mean, Aaron Hicks isn't a clubhouse.
Seems like a good deal. I mean, that matters. Absolutely.
He's not going to disturb your clubhouse. Yeah. But you know what I mean. He's a veteran guy who understands what's up.
He gets a game-winning hit or scores first, goes first to home. That's a great teammate.
And I'll tell you what, if he hangs around a little bit, he may get him some postseason shares. You don't know.
Oh.
You don't know. That never hurts. It was interesting hearing Jeff talk about the Brewers, looking at their list of injuries in particular, I just keep shaking my head because you've got a fully healthy Jays team for the most part in last place in the AL East, and you've got a limping Brewers team in first place in the Central. And I have to admit, I look at the standings. Kevin, the Cincinnati Reds, your Cincinnati Reds, are like four games out.
Yeah, it's the under 500. You can't take that division seriously. Like, you just can't. Like, that's the thing. Even when the Brewers are healthy, like, it takes perfect games from their pitching, their starting rotation.
The two dudes, the big guys. Absolutely. Well, there's three of them. There's Burns, Woodruff, and Devin Williams.
You got to have some miracles there, right? You got to have eight scoreless. And that's just a lot to ask because of the offense. You know, for whatever reason, they're just not piecing together quality at bat after quality at bat. Maybe it's talent-wise. Maybe that's what it is. Sometimes it's just not the guy's not trying. Maybe just can't. Maybe it's a little bit of that, too. So, yeah, the park's a great place to play in. It's a great hitter's park. Mm-hmm. That's why it's very odd that offensively they are as bad as they are. Right? I mean, ball line to line there. You don't really got to get it. Sometimes it's minor league park. I've been in that park a lot. You know, it is what it is. That's why, just how serious can you take them? Even when they're fully healthy, I don't know. You know, I don't know about National League when you got the behemoths that you do have in the National League that are sort of, they are what they are. And then it's sort of like the, you know, it's the National League's little engine that could. It might be like the Rays, just minus all the offensive things that they're getting this year from the Rays.
I'll tell you what, you know, I think we may have a National League little engine that could. And I'm kind of kicking myself a bit now because you kind of talked me out of thinking of them as a playoff team. And they're still got a long – listen, they got a long way to go, and the season's a long way to go. The Florida Marlins.
Ah, you're begging. Boy, you are. On your ride in from Hamilton, you just throw that against – you throw things against the
– Miami Marlins, they're only four out. They're 28 and 26.
They're like the Brewers. They got good enough pitching.
Yes.
And they're offensively, it's like you scratch your head on what you're going to get every single day. And that's what I said. I think when you get to sample sizes of you, it's like back-to-back years you're seeing offensively, you're just not good enough. Maybe it's not what you're swinging at or what you're trying to do. Maybe you just can't do.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah, just taking a look at the Central, seeing as how the Brewers are in town. They're in first place. They're 28 and 25. They've got a minus 21 run differential.
Crazy. Like,
Pittsburgh is 26 and 27.
Under 500.
Under 500.
Right? Absolutely.
They're
they are.
Two back. They're only, you're under 500, you're a game and a half out on the wild card. The wild card in the National League.
There you go.
The Reds are 24 and 29. The Chicago Cubs are 23 and 30. And it keeps sort of...
St. Louis is 24 and 32.
I don't know what's going on with the Cardinals.
With the who?
The Cardinals.
You get off to a slow start like they did. You know, you blame the manager. I don't. I think that's overrated. He's an easy finger to point to. I get what he did, by calling out one of his players. Doesn't sound like that was the player he wanted to play center. I mean, it's basically that's sort of what it sounded like. Mm. I just think when you fall behind that much, it's like the fifth. We talked about the Astros the last couple of years, how they've separated themselves. It's the 15-2 runs. And when you fall behind, it's like the Blue Jays. Can the Blue Jays go on a, say, a 13-3 run? That's what you got to ask yourself. It's the 67 wins. One of the, they have to have a run in there where it's 10-1 or 12-2 or 13-4. Can they do it? That's the thing you got to ask yourself.
I haven't seen any update yet on Kevin Kiermaier from John Schneider's media availability today. He is not. He has.
Yeah, I think he's still hurt with the back issue.
He's still hurt with the back issue.
Yeah, yeah.
But no move made. I mean, I don't know who. I don't know who they. Who would you bring up anyhow? For Kevin Kiermaier,
Kevin Biggio playing a lot. That's what that. That's what that is.
Yeah. No.
It is. Whit Merrifield be playing a little left.
Yeah.
Or she'll be playing center.
So, now Alejandro Kirk. We talked a lot about Alejandro Kirk, and he's the everyday catcher now in Danny Jansen's absence. There, we've seen some. We started to see a little bit of life from his bat.
Offense,
a little bit of life. I'm just looking at his numbers. His numbers haven't been horrible lately. Still not. What is he? He's 11-34 in his last 10 games. 2 doubles, 3 RBI. The reason I bring him up is I wanted to ask you about Alejandro Kirk, the hitter, and what you think. What is a good year? I won't even phrase it that way. When you look at Alejandro Kirk,
65 RBI.
What do you see in terms of power?
Not a ton. He's not a line-to-line guy. He might hit a home run or two to center. He's mainly a pull hitter when it comes to the home run thing. He can create a little backspin because he does, his barrel is flat, so that'll give him a chance to get to the elevated fastball, which is a big deal, right? With the velocity, you're a little late on that. He could drive a ball to right center and, you know, dare I say, for a double. It's a close double, but for some doubles. Offensively, it just looks to me like he's from one year to the other, he just doesn't have the snap that he had last year. Like it
what
was
do you mean
that,
by
well, it's
by
like that last little worried because he doesn't have a good finish a lot of the times. Like, he doesn't rotate really well. You see sometimes his foot still looking like it's pointing toward first, even when he makes solid contact. Like, he's not a big rotational guy, right? He doesn't have the perfect swing. He just has good hand-eye coordination. And his eyes are really good at directing the barrel to the baseball. He doesn't have elite bat speed. Like, for whatever reason, it looks to me like he just doesn't have the little whip that he had last year. I don't know if that's because, you know, maybe the bat's a little slower. And, you know, they're saying he runs slower. Does that have anything to do with, if you can believe that? I mean, would that have anything to do with his bat speed, too? Like, where he hits in the order, they're going to need him to get some big hits late in games. He's going to have to do that against velocity. That's the thing, right? And that's where he needs the little snap in his swing to where, right, it's – he's not a lot of, you know, short to it and long through it. It's basically like a, I don't even know how you explain that. Like, it's like a, it's like an arm bar. Like, he'll straighten his arms and it's sort of just like a, you know, it's in the zone. It's not like that little snap to the end of the, to when it's making contact and the ball's shooting off his barrel to where he can drive some balls and you know, hit some mistakes hard to all parts of the field. He's a line-to-line guy, right? He'll get the head out on a breaking ball. He'll let the fastball travel and hit it the other way on a line. Like, he can do some things that way. But he needs the little whip in his barrel, and for whatever reason, he doesn't have that. And he's another guy. Like, they got a lot of guys. If you're trying to get to that mark, right, the six, forget about who you're playing. You're trying to get to a number, whether it could be 65 wins, 66 wins. I think it has to be 67 wins, somewhere around that 95 win mark. You're going to need him to catch fire and do some things. It's sort of like you skip a guy, you get to a guy who can drive in a run, right? Not everybody's able to do that, but you're relying on a guy like Kirk. You just sort of get hot and maybe get you some big hits. I'm not saying carry a team for a week, but a couple of days, face a dude coming out of the pen that throws 98. He gets that big hit, so hopefully I get it and have a little fun doing it.
7:07 will be the first pitch tonight on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and Sportsnet. The Jays and the Milwaukee Brewers, first of three games. We are going to take a break and come back on the other side with Blair and Barker. Jason Stark joins us.
Nice.
Dan Plesac joins us. I got Jays tickets to give away. Lots ahead. It is Blair and Barker.
Deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The JD Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to Blair and Barker. Hi. We are on from 5 to 7 every day. Eastern on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and Sportsnet 360. We're on Sportsnet as well. For those of you in the Sportsnet main channels, we'll be passing you off to Blue Jay Central, 6:30, ahead of tonight's 7:07.
So stay with us.
That's facts.
Yeah. Dan Plesac will join us at 6:30. Yeah. We've been giving you, and we are giving you, the chance to win Blue Jays tickets all season long here in Blair and Barker, whether you listen on the radio or on our podcast. And again, if you're listening to us via podcast, feel free to rate
and review. Something nice about Jeff.
Now, say something nice about Kevin. Trust me.
He never gets that.
Listen.
So it's okay to say something
Kevin,
nice
Kevin,
every once in a while.
Kevin is still in his formative years. I'm not. My form is broken. What you see is what you lay off the senior discount thing. I should not have said that. The Hudson Bay commercial. I was there today and I forgot to get my senior. Anyhow,
do you have a card?
Stop it. Kevin's still in his formative years as a broadcaster, so it means a lot to him to have you say nice things about him.
Makes me sleep.
I don't read the comments or anything. Anyhow, so it doesn't really matter. Barker always tells me, "You don't need to read what somebody just said."
Such a lot.
We've been giving you a chance all season long to win Blue Jays tickets on Blair and Barker. Again, whether you're listening on the radio or on our podcast, I think I just read that.
You did.
All you have to do is text the correct answer to our daily baseball trivia question to 590. No, it isn't. All you have to trust me, it's not. All you have to do is text the correct answer to our daily baseball trivia question to 590-590. Yesterday's trivia question and answer was: MLB legend Ricky Henderson was traded to the Blue Jays from Oakland ahead of the 1993 trade deadline. Which Blue Jay was already wearing Henderson's number 24 and asked to change his number? The answer was Turner Ward. Surprised how many of you got it as quickly as you did. As I said on the air at that time, that just tells me how old you are. Because literally nobody under 50 would get that. But well done to those of you who did.
Or you can look it up.
Or you can look it up. Some of them were so fast that I presume that they actually knew the answer. Today's question is to win tickets to see the Jays and A's down at the Rogers Center on June 25th. And again, there is a chance the A's may ask you to pitch. So keep that in mind. Take your glove with you when you go
what
to the game.
I want to hit.
Today's question is to win tickets to the Jays and A's at the Rogers Center June 25th. Who was the A's manager, not general manager? So it ain't Brad Pitt. And it ain't Billy Beane. Who was the A's manager in 2002, and who was the actor who portrayed him in the movie Moneyball? You'll probably get the name of the actor. Some folks might scuffle with the name of the manager. Again, who was the A's manager, not their general manager, in 2002, and who was the actor who portrayed him in the movie Moneyball? Text your answer to 590-590 for your shot to win. See rules at sportsnet.ca/590. Let's bring in Jason Stark of The Athletic. Are they going to have to redo if the A's move to Vegas? What's going to happen? There's going to be a whole generation of fans that are going to grow up and go, what the hell was that movie about?
Well, Moneyball is more important in Vegas than in Oakland, right?
Yes, it is. Absolutely.
And money comes in handy in Vegas. But I'll be honest, maybe I'm nuts. I'm still not 100% convinced this is happening. Like, how much have you guys looked into it? Because there's some odd stuff beneath the scenes.
Oh, there's some really... I actually listened into one of the committee hearings the other day just for a couple of minutes. Well, no, I'm lying. Somebody tweeted out some... Yeah, there's some interesting stuff, including having the one guy come on and basically say, yeah, you're right. cities that give money to stadiums, it generally doesn't work out for them, but it's going to work out in Vegas. I'm sure Rob Manfred loved that, you know.
That was good salesmanship.
That was great.
All right, speaking of Rob Manfred,
yes.
You know, he had a really mysterious answer to a question last week about it was something to the effect of, what are the chances that the A's could still remain in Oakland? And given the fact that 30 seconds earlier he'd said that there could be a vote at the next owner's meeting, mm-hmm. which is in a couple of weeks, about the A's relocating, wouldn't you have thought he would have said, that ship has sailed, this thing is done, it's happening? And instead, he said, yeah, you should ask the mayor of Oakland about that. Okay? So that I thought that was kind of odd. The bill itself to finance whatever this chunk of the ballpark is that the committee was meeting on never specifically mentions the A's.
Right.
You know, so that's an odd thing. And then the other thing, like this, the full legislature, the session only has a few days left. I think it's the end of this week. And if it doesn't get approved, I don't see how it can, because it's not specific enough to approve. Then my understanding is that the legislative session ends for the year.
Yeah.
After this week. It's bizarre.
I'll tell you what, the more you listen to it, the more you read into it, it really does sound more and more like the stuff the Arizona Coyotes are going through in the NHL. It just does. It seems like there's a lot of things have been said and a lot of things have been written, but more things have not been said and more things have been left unsaid and unwritten about it. Yeah, I'm with you. It's weird because and it's strange, Jason, because I thought when the whole Vegas thing, when it first came up this year, I just kind of assumed they were going to
Slam
Vegas.
Dunk.
You had that feeling, and then, it was like a week later you started hearing, there's this. You talked about the timing of the legislative session may not work out, and it could be slow played, and there are other things tied in with the bill,
does baseball really want to leave that market in Northern California? I don't think so, because they want to expand. I think they'd rather expand to Vegas than have the A's move to Vegas. If the A's move to Vegas, then they still need a team somewhere in the Northwest to do geographic realignment.
Right.
So that sounds a lot like Northern California. So they go right back to the front of the line for expansion. What are we doing?
It's really, I talked to someone who was involved in the whole Montreal bit about this like a couple of days ago. And for those folks out there, Montreal's not going back into the that ship has sailed. Stephen Bronfman and those, fool me twice. But the point that he made was the same thing you did. He said, look, baseball is going to have a profound geographic realignment at some point soon. And the driving, one of the important factors is going to be time zones. And he made the same point. He said it makes no sense. It almost makes you think that if you take a team out of Oakland, you almost need to put a team in Portland or someplace like that to make this thing work.
Well, that's very true. You might need to do that anyway.
Right.
You know, if you're going to do geographical realignment, you kind of need somebody for the Mariners to play.
Yeah.
So that there's a lot going on behind the scenes here. You shouldn't assume anything. Never take anything at face value at a time like this.
So I'm going to ask you the same question. We asked this of Jim Bowden a week ago, and he kind of thought about the answer and kind of came out with, well, you just got to play the games that are in front of you, which it sounded very much like a former GM. I'm looking at the ALE schedule. The Red Sox, they don't play the Rays again until the first week of September after this weekend. The Jays don't get the Rays again until the last 2 weeks of September, which, surprisingly enough, is when they also get the Yankees.
Yeah.
You've talked about, and I know you've written about, how tough the AL East is. I'm just going to flat out ask you, other than, well, it really looks like the Rays, this is going to sound dumb, but it really looks like they might win this division, doesn't it? Because there's not a lot of head-to-head games left against them.
I know. Look, we're required to say there's a whole lot of baseball still to be played. We are. But they have played the best against the division, and the Jays have played the worst. I mean, the Jays are 9 under 500 against the East. They're 11 over against everybody else. So if they played no games against the East, if none of these teams would play any games against each other, the Jays would be in second place. That's how big these division games are. We haven't really delved into this a lot. I'm actually been asking a lot of people about it for a column I'm working on for end of this week or next week. This schedule skews our perception of teams' standings, divisions in a different way than the old schedule. And I'm still trying to put my finger on it, but one thing that's clear is the meaning of each game in the division is heightened because there aren't as many of them, and they're the only opportunities that you've got now to put distance between yourself and those teams. And so the Jays, by playing so badly in this stretch in May against the other four teams in the division, dug themselves a hole deep in the canyon of the AL East that is much harder to climb out of when you're not playing those teams.
Mm-hmm. Jason, let me ask you, would it make it easier for a GM, because of the reasons you just mentioned, to say trade a player that you may not re-sign in the offseason, like a Matt Chapman, right? Even if you think you might make a decent run at, now it's about wins. It ain't about winning your division, for me anyway, because you're not playing, like you just mentioned and Jeff mentioned, the teams in the American League East. So to get 95 wins, if you're a Jays fan, you need 67 more wins. That's what you're thinking now. But if you're a GM of the Blue Jays, you're thinking to yourself, man, that's going to be really hard, right, to do that? If you have a chance to sell a guy off and not say throw the towel in, would you do that? Would it make it easier sell to your fan base to do that? That's my point, because of who you're not playing.
Well, when you're in last place, it makes more sense to sell than if you're in first place. And
sure.
We just had this odd series with the Twins and Jays playing each other. And it was a last place team against the first place team. And the last place team had a better record than the first place team. We haven't seen that in almost 20 years in any series. And that just tells you how odd this whole situation is with the way the division is so stacked and the way the schedule makes it difficult to climb out of the holes. The deadline is over 2 months away. The Jays are built to win. And, a lot has changed since I saw them 2 weeks ago, but I think right now they're still totally focused on winning. Think they're as talented as any team in the division, if not the most talented. If they just play the way they're supposed to play, they can and will still make it to October. But reality will set in if you realize you're in fifth place and the road, not even to first place, but to third place or a spot in the playoffs, is so much steeper because of the schedule. Of course, that'll be a factor. Everything's a factor.
Yeah. Jason, I'm intrigued how people talk about Vladdy outside of Canada. Like, I know how we talk about him every single day, but the people you talk to, the people you hear talk about Vladdy, I would say this year, right? The way he looks, how he attacks at bats, how you hear smart people break him down. What's the conversation like around Vladdy?
So you're talking about Vladdy of 2023, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, look, Vladdy is still a mesmerizing player.
Mm-hmm.
He's a charismatic player. I just wrote this piece about the Hall of Fame last week. And, guys who get off to the kind of start in their careers at this age that Vladdy did often go to the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. So he's got that in front of him. But, this Vladdy doesn't remind me of that guy. And he doesn't remind people who are watching him of that guy, because he's in this mode now that guys get into when they struggle. I'm sure you can relate to it, Kevin.
Absolutely.
Where you're trying to force things to happen, make things happen, manufacture things to happen, instead of just letting them happen and letting your talent make them happen. And that doesn't lead to anything good in modern baseball, because there's too much information. Hitting has never been harder. Pitching's never been better. And, you know, you can't make up your mind to swing before a pitch is thrown, because everybody understands that if that's the guy you are, there's no need to throw you a strike. You know, you had to pitch to Vladdy. You had to earn it against Vladdy before this year. This guy's making it too easy on the pitchers. The talent still oozes out of him, but he's in a weird state of mind. That's what I say.
That's a great answer.
That's exactly.
Absolutely.
I mean, Kevin talked about this as well. We and John Schneider on our show talked about, look, with a lot of his guys, with the exception of Bo, essentially, he said the idea is, you know, guys are swinging at too many. To dumb it down for me, he basically said guys are swinging at too many pitches, and they're afraid to go 0-2 to get a better pitcher. They're afraid to go 1-2 to get a better pitch. They just, with the exception of Bo.
He was talking about Vladdy. Basically, what I'm saying, Vladdy.
Whereas, of course, Bo just doesn't care because Bo, I told someone the other day, look, I watched Vladdy Sr. come up, and I watched the prime of his years with Montreal. Bo reminds me of Vladdy Sr. more than Vladdy Jr. reminds me of Vladdy Sr. because Bo literally can hit a ball wherever it is pitched.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Absolutely. But I mean, Bo's gift for hitting and his hand eye and his ability to cover quadrants of the zone that other people don't is just special. He's usually compared to his own father, not Vladdy's.
Yeah.
Exactly. I see what you did there, though.
Hey, we got to talk about your list of active players that have the best shot at Cooperstown. This was a lot of fun because we played Guess the List. So I'll start. You've got four segments. The one is I Wish There Was a Path, which is Jacob DeGrom and Adam Wainwright. And I mean, I'm with you with Jacob DeGrom. I just think that when his career is over, we're going to look at that and go, yeah, but those injuries, man. We're going to look at that and just feel so bad.
He's about to turn 35 years old. He's got 80 wins. I know we're not supposed to talk about wins, but...
I know. Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, it's just hard to believe the way he's pitched and what it adds up to.
Yeah.
And I felt the same way about Adam Wainwright. There's a guy with... He's closing in on 200 wins, two second-place finishes in the Cy Young, two third-place finishes in the Cy Young. And I thought there would be more there, you know, but there's not – to me, there's just not quite enough of a body of work to say this guy's a Hall of Famer. I don't know. I always reserve the right to change my mind about anybody, including guys who are on this list and guys who didn't make the list. But it's a fun – exercise.
No, it is.
Do this. I can tell you the guys who people have been grumbling about the most.
Right.
Okay. The two guys I had as in right now.
Grinke and Votto.
Just a lot of what? All I can tell you is everybody who's had their career is in the Hall of Fame unless they have some sort of PED connection.
Yeah.
Then I agonized about whether Freddie Freeman and Paul Goldschmidt were already in, or whether, you know,
as you say, in the red zone.
In the red zone, and Freddie's at the 1 yard line. Goldschmidt's on like the 2.5 yard line.
Yeah.
So there, I mean, a lot of talk about that.
You have Bryce, Nolan Arenado, Mookie Betts, and Manny Machado there as well.
The guys in the red zone.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Bryce Harper. I mean, I think. They're all going to wind up in the Hall of Fame unless something weird happens.
Mm-hmm.
But I, you know, like some of these, These guys have 1,300 hits, 1,500 hits. There's no such thing as a 1,300 hit Hall of Famer. You actually have to have the career.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, if we're going to use the red zone analogy, it doesn't matter if you drive 60 yards if you don't score. You've got to get it in the end zone.
Yeah. To me, the interesting list as well was the guys on the path like Shohei Ohtani.
Altuve is the one.
I saw. You have Aaron Judge, Garrett Cole, Juan Soto, Ronald Acuna Jr., who is just, I mean, he's a story in his own right now. But Jose Altuve, I wanted to ask you about that. Do you think, and you know where I'm going with this, do you think the whole cheating / garbage can banging thing, do you think that might have as much impact on Altuve as PEDs have had in some guys? Because my sense is it kind of might.
I think it kind of might, too.
Yeah.
All right, but if that's true, why did Carlos Beltran get as many votes as he got this
year? Fair point.
I did this list for Brian Kenny on MLB Network, and that was his observation that I've totally exaggerated the impact of this on voters. And I have no idea yet whether I have or I haven't. You know, if you're one of those people who doesn't vote for any of the PED guys, for example, you're taking a stand against cheating. Why would you not take a stand against this form of cheating? There are a lot of questions about how involved Altuve was in this. But it's got to cost him some votes. Otherwise, he would seem like he's on an easy path.
Yeah. I really think it's going to be fascinating. And the Beltran numbers were, but you see the thing there again, Beltran, a lot of that career happened before then. And whereas Altuve, a lot of Altuve's career happened before then, but the prime of Altuve's career kind of happened during that time. And I just,
like the 23 home runs in the postseason.
Yeah.
That part.
Exactly. Because one of the things I'm a voter and, you know, and I vote for the PED guys, but one of the things I really, really, really do put an emphasis on is performance in the postseason. I'm a big believer. I like dudes who are in the Hall of Fame, who've got rings and who played well in the postseason. And a guy like Jose Altuve for me is a slam dunk, but I got to think there are people, I mean, I'm with you, Jason. I think there are people who are going to look at those numbers and go, yeah, but. And it's going to be funny, you know, because there's something about writing about a guy who was using PEDs. Guys were injecting stuff and taking stuff. That's one thing. Guys who are, like, banging in garbage cans, you know, I mean, it's going to be odd having a debate about guys banging in garbage cans and everything, getting into the Hall of Fame. And we're not talking about science and things like that. We're talking about garbage cans, for God's sake.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of science that went into the –
yes,
when they banged the can and when they didn't. But yeah. You know, we've talked a lot in these segments about Evan Drellick's book, right? And I thought there would be more specific detail on the Altuve walk-off homer,
yes,
against Aroldis Chapman than there actually was. It remains really murky. It was another just an odd moment.
Yes,
that guy who he hit a home run off a guy who was throwing 102 and wouldn't let his teammates tear his jersey off when he got to home plate after the biggest walk-off home run he will ever hit. And then reemerged from the clubhouse wearing a different jersey. And I just don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what to tell you. I have my own observations about my time in Houston watching stuff there and being suspicious of stuff and listening to all the people from other teams saying, what about this? What about that? And I honestly don't know what's true and what's not true, but it really makes it hard to evaluate what any of that represents.
Yeah.
Even now, even if they've won twice.
Yeah, it really does. Jason, yeah. Really good of you to join us, man. Terrific
Thanks,
insight.
Jason.
A lot of fun. Thanks, my friend.
Great.
Always enjoyed, man. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks.
Absolutely.
See you later.
That's a great Jason Starr of The Athletic. You got to read his column. A lot of debate. Barker and myself have a Zach Greinke, Joey Votto debate. I don't know how I feel
all the
about
time.
I don't know. I need to think more about both dudes. I need to think more. I know that's sacrilegious because Joey Votto's from here. I need to think more about both dudes. The guys that he has in the
all
red
base
zone
percentages is for a first baseman.
Yeah. I know. I absolutely hear you on that. All right, those of you who are watching us on the Sportsnet mains, Blue Jay Central is just around the corner. Stick with us in 360. Dan Plesak, the always excellent Dan Plesak, will join us. We will continue to get you set for the Jays-Brewers game, 1-3 tonight. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Sportsnet 360, and Sportsnet.
Covering the Raptors in depth like no one else. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we are back. Oh, we are just a few minutes away from first pitch at the Rogers Center. You say Kikuchi, I got a good feeling about this series.
Huh. Wow.
Smells like sweep to me.
Oh, who's doing the sweep?
Smells like a Jay sweep. I was told by a very good source last week, quote, we will turn this ship around.
I talked to the same person.
Were you left with the same feeling?
Yeah.
There was a...
Spotty. I had spotty feelings.
Huh? I don't even know what a spotty feeling
like
is.
Sometimes I'm with you. Yeah. Sometimes I'm not.
Mm-hmm. Anyhow, 7:07 will be the first pitch tonight on Sportsnet 590.
Yes.
Sportsnet. Reminder, Thursday's game is 1:07. We will still be on our regular time, 5-7 on Sportsnet.
What?
Yeah. The game is at 1:07 Thursday. We're going to be on 5-7, I believe.
When were we supposed to go on?
Well, we could have done Blue Jays talk. We are doing Blue Jays talk following tonight's game and tomorrow night's game.
Huh?
Yes. You didn't know that? Well, you do now.
I don't know anything.
Yeah, we are doing Blue Jays talk tonight after the game and tomorrow. And then the Jays are off to New York to play the Mets.
What can go wrong?
Nothing can go wrong. I told you. Predicting sweep. I'm in a buoyant mood.
Wow.
You've changed. I have changed. That is very true. Where's my info sheet? Here it is. Again, it's a reminder, 7:07 first pitch tonight. Dan Plesak is MLB Network analyst. He's a former Brewers and Blue Jays pitcher.
Three-time
All-Star professional golfer.
Well, I believe he is. Yeah.
Are you a professional golfer too?
Are you kidding? I wish I was. I'm an aspiring, wishing, wannabe professional golfer.
Barker, where'd you get that from? Did someone tell you?
BS artist talking baseball.
Every time I see you on the MLB Network, you always talking about it. Just came from here, and I just shot 70 or whatever it is you said you shot, which is really good, right? So I'm assuming that you're really good at golf. That's why I said it.
There's a long pause there.
It's a long pause.
Do we have Dan?
I
hear new.
No longer.
I hear. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
You know what? He's probably out in the golf course right now.
Right, probably.
Plesak is, he was so much fun to cover when he was here.
He's like the one lefty that threw 1,000 miles an hour.
Just hard.
Like really, really hard, right?
It's strange. You know, I remember watching it in spring training, watching every now and then spring training, you like to go down behind and watch guys throw their BP sessions or get down behind home plate in games. It was watching him pitch, man, was uncomfortable because it was.
Think about hitting off. No, thank you.
Yeah, no. It was something else. And as we mentioned, he is a 3-time All-Star. I see that our very best are trying to get him back. Mark looks a little concerned here. Oh, no, he's got him. There he goes. He's apologizing. He's going to blame me, of course.
Yeah.
There we go. All right. We have Dan Plesak back for PGA golfer, MLB Network analyst.
Man, I wish PGA golfer. Analyst, I'll buy that. Baseball fan, I'll buy that. Blue Jays fan, I'll buy that. Professional golfer, you're talking to the wrong guy.
Hey, Dan, when do you think players start looking at the standings? You know, Memorial Day is kind of one of those touch points, right, where everybody says, all right, take a look. Were you like that as well as a player?
Yeah, it's hard not to. Listen, anybody that tells you they're not or they don't, Yeah, that's kind of the company line. Like, oh, I'm just worried about today. I'm not worrying about tomorrow. I'm not looking in the rearview mirror. What happened yesterday? It's hard not to, and it's really hard not to when you have the type of expectations going into the season that the Blue Jays have had. And I was on record 2 weeks ago, and I really believed it. I thought that by July 1st, that the Blue Jays would be in first place. I really did. They started getting things together. The bullpen started pitching well. They started hitting. They were getting healthy again. Chris Bassett had a couple of really good turns to the rotation. Berríos really started to step up, and I thought, okay, I saw Kikuchi. I did a game for Apple TV, Jays, Yankees in Yankee Stadium on a Friday night, and that's the best I've seen Kikuchi in a couple of years. And since then, he's gone south. Manoah's gone south, and I'm just having a real hard time figuring this. This has been one of the mystery teams to me this year so far. They are so much better than their record says, but sooner or later they've got to start winning some games because they don't want to find themselves on the outside looking in when the playoffs start in October.
Dan, you mentioned Chris Bassett. What do you think of his whole thing that goes on in the mound? He calls his own game. He's got 9 pitches. Like that in itself has got to be something special, right?
Yeah, he is. You know what I like about him? Anywhere that he's been, you talk to the people at the Mets, you talk to people at the Oakland A's, cares a lot about what he does, takes a lot of pride in what he does, has good stuff, doesn't have great stuff. He competes. He goes out there. He gives you everything that he has. He's a hard guy not to like. He's a hard guy not to root for. And he's really been a pleasant surprise. I mean, listen, he's had a couple of clunkers that have kind of skewed those numbers to make it look a little worse than he is. I think his ERA is just a little bit under 4, but he's pitched a lot better than that. The mystery guy to me is you got to figure out what the hell's going on with Manoah. You have to get him figured out. He's gone from a front of the rotation guy that you want to pitch game one in New York on a Friday. You want him to go to Boston and pitch to a guy where right now he can't get out of his own way. And hopefully he can figure this thing out.
Yeah, you know, the Jays have said a couple of things here. One, they have no other options. I mean, they don't have anybody at AAA who can come up and even give them 4 innings. And John Schneider said, look, we're going to continue run him out there. He's going to work in his side sessions. That's great to say, but Dan, at some point, man, he keeps getting it handed to him. You've got to do something, don't you?
Yeah, you do. But the problem is, you know, I think the biggest thing that he's fighting through right now, I think for the first time in his career, since his days at the University of West Virginia, his confidence has taken a knocking. I mean, this is a guy that's front and center guy. He's a guy that comes out, he leaves the bullpen wearing that jacket. He's coming out, he's used to taking names and numbers. He's used to seeing the lots of swings and misses and dictating the pace of play. And he's had a really rough go. He had the one decent start in New York when he matched up against Gerrit Cole. But outside of that, it's been more missed than hit. He's had a hard time getting a slider over for strikes. His last game, he's walking just as many guys as he's striking out. So I think he's got a confidence thing that he's got to figure out. If there was ever a guy that could use like 5 really good innings, like 5 innings, 2 hits, no runs, maybe a couple of walk here and there and 5 or 6 strikeouts, he could use that in the worst way. I don't try to jump to conclusions and say, okay, he's not going to figure out. He's too young. He's too good. He's already had some really good moments wearing a Blue Jays uniform. There is no way in hell he has gotten this bad in a short period of time. It could be mechanics. It could be delivery. It could be a loss of confidence. It could be a little bit of all of those things. But it wouldn't surprise me that a light went off in one of these next starts or two, and he has an inning where he has a flashback and remembers the feel of that breaking ball, and it's there again, and he'll start to pitch better again. I would be very, very surprised if his season continues to go like this the rest of the way.
Yeah, velocity's down too, which worries you a little bit. But for Jays fans, man, they need him. They need to win 67 games. They're going to have him do Alek Manoah things to win 67 yes. games. But I want to ask you, my buddy here that works with me every single day is in love with Nate Pearson. I'm still on the fence. And my question to you, because you were a high leverage, you know, arm at the back end of a game, and I just want to know from you, from your point of view, how do you know when a pitcher is ready to pitch in high leverage situations, like the eighth and ninth inning. How do you know that, Dan?
You'll know when you run him out there and you put him out there in a tough spot on the road in Baltimore. You run him out there in a tough spot in Yankee Stadium. What I like, that doesn't grow on trees, he's got a big arm.
Yeah.
He's 98 to 100. He has good sink. He's throwing strikes. That's the one thing, you know, that if you're looking for him to be a guy that's going to be a factor in a bullpen, he's pitched 14 innings. He's only walked five up to this point. That's good. If he can continue to do that, I think you're going to see him get more confident. The more confident he is, the more strikes he's going to throw. The more strikes he throws, the more he's going to pitch. And, you know, it's a double-edged sword. You hear this a lot from managers where a pitcher will tell them, hey, you know what, I need to pitch more. The more I pitch, you know, the better I am. And then the manager replies, well, the better you pitch, the more you're going to get a chance to pitch. So, but I'm buying him. I am. And I'm buying a couple of things. I'm buying his stuff. And I'm buying the fact that when you take a guy that's been primarily a starter, you put him in a bullpen, you don't have to worry about trying to establish that second or third pitch. But I'm going to tell you what he'll do now. He's believing himself, throwing strikes, throwing that fastball, using that hard breaking ball, and he's got a chance right now to let his confidence. His confidence has to be at an all-time high right now. If he continues to throw strikes, I think you're going to see him pitch more and more in high leverage, the guy that may be handing that ball over to Jordan Romano in the ninth inning.
Dan, you know what he does great? The elevated fastball. That's a theme now, right? Is that a tough pitch to master? You don't want to be non-competitive with it. You got to throw it somewhat close to the top of the strike zone, right? He seems to be good at it.
He is, and it's not an easy thing to do because, listen, most pitchers from your 8 years old to the day you start playing in college or high school or pro ball, they're telling you, hey, down in the zone, keep the ball down. So as a pitcher, you're used to honing in at the knees. You're throwing at that low strike. But, man, right now, if you could throw that chest-high fastball, and particularly you could spin it like he does where he gets a lot of RPMs, and so that 97, 98, it plays, it stays on a really good straight plane. It's a difficult pitch to hit. The key for Nate Pearson is going to be this, getting strike one. If he can get strike one in the first two pitches and start to make them swing at his pitches, you're going to see his strikeouts go up and you're going to see his ERA go down. I'm buying. I think he has a chance to be a huge weapon in that bullpen.
There you go.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, with Nate Pearson. Barker's kind of overstated.
No, I'm not.
My whole thing is, I have no choice because I don't like the options.
But you're in last place.
But it's not like you've got a ton of options necessarily better than Nate Pearson. What I find intriguing about him, Dan, is he started throwing a curve in winter ball, and he's – it depends who you talk to with the Jays. There are people you talk to that say, man, you know what we'd like to see Nate do? We'd like to see Nate just go fastball curve. Kind of, you know, put the slider, not necessarily put it away, but let the curve take precedence over it. How do you feel about that? Like, is that a good combination for a guy at the back end of the bullpen?
It's a great combination, but this is the issue I have with guys with really good curveballs. It seems to play better in starting pitchers than it does relievers because a couple of things. And it goes back, you go back and you look at the evolution and when Clayton Kershaw really started to take off. He was a four-seam fastball, 12-6 curveball guy. That curveball can be a very difficult pitch for umpires to call balls and strikes. Yeah. You'll see a lot of times that umpires will buckle just as a hitter. They'll see that curveball, and if it's a tight one and it's a good one, they'll think it's a high fastball. And I don't know how many times you'll see a hitter kind of duck a fastball or a curveball, and it fools an umpire too. It can be a very difficult pitch to get called strike, and it can be a very difficult pitch to control because the break is bigger. What's great about the slider and the cutter, the break isn't as big, and you have a better chance of controlling the tilt, the break, and how much you want it to break with the slider than you can the curveball.
Blue Jays are getting the Brewers tonight. Well, how serious should I take the Brewers? 3 games above .500.
Bark, I'd like to say take them serious, but they're just not hitting either. I mean, they have a Jesse Winker they acquired in a trade from the Mariners. He hasn't hit in 2 years. He was great with the Reds. He didn't do anything last year with the Mariners. Christian Yelich is just a shell of the guy that he was 3 or 4 years ago. Willy Adames is hurt. They've got some good young outfielders, guys that have some pop. They have a lot of swing and miss in that lineup. And this should be, for the Blue Jays, a chance where score. They could score some runs because the Brewers' starting pitching hasn't been as good either. They're a good team. They're not a really good team. They're in a bad division right now. The Pirates have kind of come back to the pack. The Cubs have been playing terrible. The Cardinals are bad. The Reds are rebuilding. This is a chance for the Blue Jays to make some hay. They're catching them at the right time. They're not hitting, and that pitching hasn't been as good as it's been. One of their best guys, Woodruff, is on the 60-day DL. So if there was ever a time you want to get the Brewers, now's the time to get them.
Dan, last question before we let you run. I know that you've done a lot of national games. You have a national focus. You talk to a lot of people. Talk to me about the Texas Rangers. They're legit, aren't they?
Yeah, they're legit. And you know what's even more scary? They have a lot of talent in the minor leagues. They have a lot of money. And they are going to be fiercely aggressive at the trade deadline. And I think what they need to do, they need to upgrade their bullpen a little bit. Just think about this. They've only gotten 6 starts from Jacob DeGrom. They're playing so well right now that they don't even have to rush him back. Eovaldi has been great. Jonathan Gray has never pitched better in his life. And Martin Perez has been really good. They're in a great spot right now where they don't have to run and worry about, hey, get DeGrom back in there. He's going to work at his own pace. They're 3 games ahead of the Astros right now. And right now, I think their pitching might be a little bit better than the Astros right now. Mm-hmm. So as long as Eovaldi can stay healthy, he's throwing like a number one, and he probably is going to make the All-Star team. Their starting pitching has been good in that lineup. They can score some runs. They're not going away. They're legit. It's going to be a 2-team race. I just don't think the Angels have enough pitching to stay with the Astros and the Rangers. But the Rangers are in this for the long haul, and the closer it gets to July and the trade deadline, look out, because they have money and they have prospects, and they're going to be lurking to go get the best relievers that are out there. They're going to be in on them all.
Dan, really good of you to do this, man. Great to talk to you again.
That's
be
great
well.
Stuff. Thanks, buddy.
Anytime, guys. Anytime. Let's do it again.
Absolutely. Take care. That's Dan Plesac, MLB Network analyst, former Brewers and Blue Jays pitcher.
I own Nate Pearson. Whoa, boy. Dan is.
Well, I mean, I
get what he's saying about throw him in there in the 8th inning with a 1-run lead on the road, but you're in last place.
Well,
you have any idea that's going to go well?
Okay, well, let me ask you this.
Predictability.
Just hang on. You said you're in last place in the AL East. Would you do it if you're in 4th place?
No.
Would you do it if you're in 3rd? Like, what? My point is,
no.
When are you going to do it, Kev?
Mm.
Never? You're going to keep going Jimmy Garcia and Eric Swanson, well, Jimmy Garcia, Eric Swanson. You're going to keep doing that?
Well, they're telling you by when they put him into the 8th inning a couple of days ago that it's 8-9-1 in the order.
They're taking baby steps.
There you go. So if you want to do that, go for
it's
it.
Baby steps.
We're talking meat of the order, 2-3-4, 1-run lead in Boston.
Why? So what? You're going to be...
Because winning matters now. Like, you got look, predictability.
So you're going to be 10. Okay, you're going to be 10.5 back instead of 9.5 back. Wow, boy.
Nine and a half's not 10.5.
No. I mean, you just.
Well, we'll see. You guys seem to be higher on him than I am.
He throws the elevated fastball. You're making it sound like this is that oh my God, it's going to upset the apple cart if we actually let Nate Pearson have a chance to fail because everything else is going so well. It's so contrary to what you would normally say about a guy.
Huh.
It just is.
Yeah, I don't know.
And you might as well. All the money you spent signing this guy, the spoon feeding you've done, the amount of technology you put into him, the learning curve, the injuries, all of this stuff.
Time will tell.
Let's find out what he's about.
Yeah.
And if he can't do it, then boop.
Mm.
Then you punt.
Well, we've seen him do it in the 7th inning.
But if we can do it, I'll take that stuff over anything anybody has in the bullpen other than Jordan Romano.
Mm.
I might as well find out now. Because as I said, 10.5, 11.5, 12.5, I'm not winning the division. I'm not. And if one Nate Pearson high leverage situation that he torches is going to cost me a postseason spot, screw it. I probably shouldn't have been going to the postseason anyhow. I
hope you're right.
I know you're part of you. You're doing this because you know it.
I hope you're right.
Because you know that every now and then I hone into something. You think it's fun. Let's poke fun at the old guy. Let's make the old guy get upset. I get it.
You're pretty locked in on that.
Yeah.
You went from
way over there to just.
Well, because I have no choice. If someone were to come along and say, I've got a better option, then I go, okay.
You love the velocity, though. I give you that. And that elevated fastball, that's the thing.
And I just
throw it more.
And I'm.
That's a.
Like, I am, and Dan made a great point about the. I'm intrigued.
Don't blame the catcher. It's not the catcher's fault.
I'm intrigued to see how that curve plays. And yes, it is a lot of times the catcher's fault.
It is not.
Sure, it is.
Oh, boy.
Anyhow.
Who throws it? Catcher or the pitcher?
Yeah. Well, catcher's supposed to call the game. Catcher's supposed to call the game.
You got two pitches. You can read bats.
Catcher's got less to think about.
He should have two pitches.
Anyhow.
Could have a third one with the elevated fastball.
Okay.
I hope you're right.
For your sake,
I hope you're right.
Well, it's not for my sake.
I hope you're right.
It's not going to matter. I was right about Jose Berríos, and I keep waiting for you to. I keep waiting for you to apologize for that and to tell me that I was right.
He earned the way we talked about him. He earned that.
I kept telling you, got faith in the athlete, faith in the pitcher, faith in the athlete, faith in the pitcher. And you said, well, you better because of the contract. Contracts don't matter.
They do, too.
No, they don't.
They do.
No, they don't.
Absolutely.
The contract just means that at one point in your career, somebody thought you were worth that money. That's.
Oh, I'm not hating. Good for him. But he was pitching like he was making $3 million. So there you go.
No.
Yeah.
No, he wasn't.
Yeah, he was.
No, he wasn't. No, he wasn't.
Well, he's not now.
No, he won't.
How's that?
Yusei Kikuchi starts tonight. I know we talked about this a little bit at the top of the show. God, there's been a lot going on today. I'll give you the Jays lineup just ahead of the game if you're listening to us driving to the game or whatever. Springer, Bichette, Guerrero, Belt, Chapman, Merrifield, Varsho, Kirk, Biggio. Yusei Kikuchi on the mound.
Sounds like a winner.
I told you. It's the first of a three-game sweep tonight. I can feel it.
Wow.
I can feel it. Early signs, you talked about the Brewers. They're not very good offensively. Well, they're not very good offensively against lefties. So give me your Yusei Kikuchi. What's your plan of attack? What's your plan of attack?
Everywhere fastballs around the zone. Be competitive with it. If you're competitive with that, tough takes. Out of the hand, it's not a ball. If that's the case because of how hard you throw and because they aren't good at hitting lefties. The cutter thing that you like to throw, if you want to call it a slider, nobody believes that. You can call it a slider if you want to. And the little split change you want to throw with two strikes, go for it. But if he's competitive around the zone with the fastball because of how hard he throws it, he'll be okay. He'll give them a chance to have the big inning, which is what they're going. They're probably not going to blow the Brewers out. They're going to play for the big inning, right?
Adrian Hauser's been okay in his...
He doesn't give up homers. That's what I said. Play for the big inning.
Right.
You're going to have to string together and maybe run into one. You know, blooping a bomb a couple of times. Can you do that? And hopefully, fingers crossed, that you light enough candles that Vladdy goes deep. That's your fingers crossed right there. Because he's going to... That could turn this season around. I mean, that sounds a little dramatic.
It
sure's got that feel.
It would have...
Let's be honest.
If you had said it 2 weeks ago, I'd kind of, but we are kind of,
we're there.
I mean, Memorial Day's kind of, that's a time where you do start, you start, if not seriously examining the standings, that's when I start looking at the schedule. And that's when I start thinking, okay, how many games do I have left against this team? When's the easy part? Because everybody's got a part of the schedule where it should be easy. And you know, we talked about this ad nauseum. We talked about it with Jason Stark. I mean, the fact of the matter is the Jays are running out of head-to-head opportunities to beat teams that are possibly go to the playoffs.
You want to make all the other games that you've played mean something more when you do play those other teams in September, right?
Yeah.
That's what you want. And Vladdy can help that. Stop chasing that ball a little bit in. And say, I got this. For about 3 weeks. Because you want him to be Chapman of the first month. Because his Chapman is like times two of Chapman. That's what you want. You get that? Now you're cooking.
7:07 will be the first pitch. It's just around the corner. 7:07 tomorrow night as well. Alek Manoah will be on the mound for the Blue Jays. And then a reminder, Thursday is a 1:07 first pitch. And Kevin Gausman will be on the mound for the Blue Jays. In that particular game. And I'm forecasting a sweep. Yeah, I did.
Mm.
It's got to turn around. It has to turn around. I'm with with Plesak, with a lot of other people.
You should be.
I don't think they're
about that.
I just don't think they're that bad.
Who, the Blue Jays?
I mean, that didn't sound right because the record is what the record is. They are the last place team in the AL East. Full value
They've
for
earned that record. Let's say it like it is. Turn it around, though.
Listen, 2013, Vegas had the Jays as the odds-on favorites to go to the World Series. This season does not yet feel the way 2013 did it. How about
there
that?
There you go.
Not yet.
I like this Jeff Blair.
Yeah.
Yes.
Let's see what Jeff Blair shows up tomorrow. That's it for us. Blair and Barker, 5 to 7 tomorrow. Don't forget, Blue Jays talk tonight following the Jays win. It's Barker and myself. Have yourself a great night.